Hey, everybody. This is Ian from Montreal, and you're listening to this episode of Ivy Envy Podcast, brought to you by awesome Patreon supporters just like me, even though my money's in Canadian. I don't know what that's good for. Go Cubs, go!
Hi, and thanks for downloading this episode of the Ivy Envy Podcast. This is episode number 390. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hey, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
We did not have a midweek episode this week, but I think it was a pretty nice week. The Cubs went 5-2 since we recorded last Sunday afternoon. And the crazy thing about that is that people are freaking out.
Well,
I'm not freaking out. Should I be, Kurt?
No, I just wanted to kind of go along with the...
It's great. I love it. I know. I love it so much. Like, losses, I think, you know, we texted earlier, and I think Andy, or maybe you said, or Kurt, one of you guys said something about how losses kind of hurt right now. Mm-hmm. Just because they don't lose that often. But on the other hand, it's like you can I think these people are just like just dying to be negative, and they don't have very many opportunities. And so then when they finally have their opportunity, they just look like idiots.
Yeah. I mean, the Cubs have lost fewer games than the Cardinals did in their opening series. let's put it in perspective a little bit.
Yeah, so I think like in the first 2 weeks of the season, the Cubs have lost now three games. And I feel like the bandwagon people, or the people that kind of disappeared during the bad seasons, they've come back, and they're going to freak out with any loss. And God help us if the Cubs lose two or three in a row. And then I think there's also like a segment of the fan base that's just like waiting for the other shoe to drop. And so they're going to go off the deep end with any loss. But my God, this team is so good. And I understand that we're only 2 weeks into the season, but if what we've seen in the first few weeks of the season, if that's anything close to what we're going to see throughout the season, and the team is in place for the next 3 to 4 years, this is the team for the next 3 to 4 years, and it's only going to get better and deeper as reinforcements continue to come up from the minors. I don't know. It's just, even though like the Cubs lost today, it was kind of a ugly loss, kind of sucked, and it felt like they had an opportunity. But I think I'm just going to say that if you freaked out about an ugly loss to the Rockies, just stop. Just don't worry about it. You'll be okay.
Yeah. I think that's good advice. Just chill a little bit.
Yeah.
Your shoes and relax your socks.
So on this episode, we're going to talk about the Red Series and the Rockies series. We're going to talk about the new clubhouse, Javi Baez's return, and we're also going to briefly look at the teams in the Cubs minor league system. Before we dig into all that, though, buying tickets online for sporting events like Cubs games can be complicated. You get your tickets picked out at what appears to be a good price, and then at the end, they sneak in huge fees. If this has been your experience, then you need to try SeatGeek, and they've made it easier than ever to buy sports and concert tickets. I was in St. Louis this week. I bought some tickets for the Cardinals-Brewers game on Wednesday. I got a great deal on them through SeatGeek, and definitely paid less than all of the Cardinals fans sitting around me that purchased them through the Cardinals website. But earlier in the day, I was kind of tracking prices on the Blackhawks Blues tickets for the game that night. I did not end up buying those tickets, but it was really handy to be able to watch the prices on there. And the nice thing is that if we would have decided to do that, I could have easily turned around and sold the tickets to the Cardinals game right from the app, would have been super easy. So as it turns out, the Blackhawks lost and the Cardinals lost by blowing it late in the game. So I guess I picked the better game to go to. And the Cardinals are 1-5 when I'm in attendance, by the way. So I think it's time to buy season tickets. So
yeah, I was just gonna
see. Yeah, we got to figure it out so I can just start ordering tickets from SeatGeek for Cardinals games and driving down there on for important games, preferably when the Cubs are in town. But so SeatGeek has become the first place I go for tickets now. SeatGeek wants to give you $20 for your first purchase, and here's how you get the $20. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, and tap on Add a Promo Code. Enter the promo code IVY, that's in all caps, IVY. And then after you make your first ticket purchase, SeatGeek will send you $20. It's super easy, and it will save you money. So download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code IVY today. Okay, so there's one thing, one more thing I wanted to say before we jump into things. We play Katie Day's By the Lakeside song at the end of most of our episodes during the season. And Katie played our spring training meetup, and tons of people tell me how much they like her music and they like that song, and it really means something. That song kind of holds a special place in their hearts. And it's so easy to listen to music on YouTube and not pay for music. And I'm guilty of this. I think probably all three of us are somewhat. Andy, you buy a lot of music, but it's kind of a bummer for independent musicians, the way the music industry is now. And so I was thinking yesterday about how amazing it was that when we asked for iTunes reviews for our podcast, so many people took 5 minutes to write a review for us. And so I thought, if so many of you are willing to take those 5 minutes to write a review in iTunes, we should rally the troops and get everyone to go to iTunes or the Google Play Store and support Katie by purchasing that song By the Lakeside. The track is only 99 cents, and I just think it would be a great way to show our support to Katie and show her that we appreciate that song. And, you know, it kind of became an anthem for the 2015 season, and I expect, you know, I expect that song to give us those same feelings here in 2016. So if you want to support Katie and her music a little more, she's got two EPs out. One of them is under $4 and one is under $6. And Katie's a great Cubs fan and a really great person. And so let's show her that we appreciate her contribution to Cubs fans. So pause the podcast right now and go buy her track or her EPs. And I think that we should support all of the people that are doing cool and creative things that involve the Cubs. So I just wanted to say that. So after the Cubs wrapped up their series in Arizona, they won that series 3-1. They came back to Chicago for the first time this season, which means they got to see their new clubhouse, the new digs. So what did you guys think about the video and photos of the clubhouse?
I think the kind of the most interesting thing about kind of seeing it is, like, when you watch that video of them coming in, it looked like kids on Christmas morning. And I think yeah, that's how you know it's genuine, is that here's millionaires, most of them,
right,
coming into this space that, and they're just, you know, they're floored by it. They think it's so cool. So, I mean, you know, that reaction was genuine, and it was kind of cool to see, you know, after so many years. Well, most of these guys haven't been around that long, but so many years of such a crappy facility that they finally got.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, not only has Wrigley Field's home clubhouse been crappy and the training facilities there and everything been crappy, but I think, like, it has to be pretty exciting for them to have had those crappy environments, see better things on the road, all, you know, throughout their careers
as
a visitor, and then they come home to their place and their place looks better than any visitor clubhouse they've been to. So I mean, and to still have the charm and everything of Wrigley Field, and to be able to have that luxury of what they walked into, I think it's really neat.
Yeah. Maybe people are making a little bit too much of it, I don't know, but I do like the circular clubhouse idea, where there's an equality to it. You know, people have been bringing up the Knights of the Round Table at Camelot, right, and that type of thing. But yeah, I think with, like, the rectangular layout, there does become a little bit of a hierarchical feel to it. So I did like that aspect of it.
Yeah, Michael.
Yeah, I think it.
Oh, I was gonna say, I was talking to Michael from Galesburg, and he said that it looked like a nightclub that has bottle service. And it really does have a nightclub feel, but I think that's perfect for this group. These are young guys and it looks fun, and it's got a celebration room where they can celebrate after wins. And I guess that's where the DJ is set up and the smoke machines and everything. But
do you guys think, though, that it's like a good thing for them to constantly be able to have the opportunity to forget they're at work?
I do. I mean, I guess that I'm to the point where I don't worry too much about what they do behind the doors. And I know a lot of people sit and worry about, you know, this whole celebration thing and the fact that it might be them focusing on the wrong thing. But, you know, I guess I'm coming around to the idea that just have fun. Yeah. And, you know, you play baseball for a living, so go ahead and have fun.
And we've seen it work well so far. I mean, so.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking is based on last year. I mean, I think that's just I think that athletes by nature are competitive. Obviously, you don't get to that level without being competitive. And I think that, you know, like Joe Maddon says, and it's on one of the walls down there in the clubhouse, you know, don't let the pressure exceed the pleasure. I think they have enough pressure. They have enough to get stressed out about, or would, you know, with athletes, things get in their heads and stuff like that. And I think they need that opportunity to decompress. And, you know, and I think about too, like, it's just got to imagine, like, I was kind of thinking about like a rain delay and what it would have been like to go into the old clubhouse for like a 2 or 3 hour rain delay. And it would just be miserable in there, I would imagine, you know. And like this now is like where they can kind of like decompress, have fun, you know, eat, you know, do whatever they do. I just think it's good. And if it's on top of everything too, I think that it makes it a lot more appealing for potential free agents and stuff too. I think that if you're a free agent, you would really have had, especially, I mean, imagine if you are, you know, a position player and you're a free agent and you're looking around and then you can go to the Cubs, which, you know, have a lot of tradition, good or not, but, you know, they pack Wrigley Field, they have good fans, all that kind of stuff. But then it's like, oh, well, they don't really have a batting cage I can go to if I need to warm up. You know, if I get a day off and I need to come in and pinch hit, I don't have anything like that. I mean, you know, the training facilities, you know, the weight room and all that kind of stuff are kind of pathetic. And I think that you would consider those types of things. So I think it makes them more competitive just in baseball in general because of that.
Yeah, and I remember we talked about this, what, a year and a half ago, something about when these renovations were announced. We talked about, is this going to be a draw? And at the time, I know we all agreed that it has to be. And now you see it come to fruition, and it's sort of like, wow, yeah, if I'm a free agent, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, $100 million versus $120 million, like that's your contract deal versus your day-to-day life in the clubhouse. I think it definitely has some weight to it. So money is probably the most important, but this is probably going to come in at like a close number two, facilities.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of going back, you know, I was just thinking about we were talking about the pressure, you know, and like, Andy, you kind of asked about what, I don't know, how did you word it? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but something about, you know, whether it's too fun or something. How did you say it? I don't want to mess it up. I don't
know. You could apply all kinds of adjectives, too fun, too comfortable, too dim. You know, I don't know.
It is underground.
it is pretty dark in there.
A bunch of moles.
But you know, if you think about, as Cubs fans, look back. I don't know if we've, okay, look back at like the 07-08 team. That was a team that had a lot of pressure on it and didn't appear to really let the pressure exceed the pleasure, you know? And so I think there's just something about this group of guys. There's something about the type of clubhouse guys that they've gone after. There's something about bringing the right manager in for this type of environment. I just think it's perfect. And is that going to be perfect? I mean, this clubhouse is not going away, obviously. And so let's say in 7 or 8 years, the Cubs have a team that's not so great. Fans are going to hate the fact that those guys have this like cushy place to go to. And I mean, imagine if this clubhouse was around when like Soriano was with the Cubs, you know, and the team was bad. So I think right now it fits perfectly. And I think that's all that really matters right now.
I like that Madden's been clear about the fact that, like, this celebration room thing, you win, you spend 5 or 10 minutes in there, you get it out.
You get one song. You're
having fun. And you move on. Like, then according to him, they start preparing for the next day.
Yeah.
And one other positive I like about it is that, like, let's say a guy like, you know, Matt Caesar or some other role player has a game-winning hit or walk-off hit, whatever the case might be. Right. You go in there, and that guy gets credit. Everybody's having a good time for 10 minutes.
Right.
They celebrate. And it's sort of like, it's the same as a sort of round clubhouse thing. It's equality. It's everybody's celebrating whoever had the, you know, who played a part in that game. And so I like it for that reason too.
Well, and I think that, like, if you think that this is out of the ordinary, I think you're wrong. You know, like, celebrations happened after wins anyways. It happened in a clubhouse with, you know, especially back in the day, they crack open some beers and smoke some cigarettes, you know, and it's just, they sell it. I mean, why would a team not be able to celebrate for 5 or 10 minutes? And who cares if it's with a DJ and music and a smoke machine and stuff, you know? But I'll tell you what, wait till somebody like twists an ankle dancing in there.
Oh, man.
All hell will break loose.
Slips on the rubber floor.
So, I mean, I just think this is stuff that happened anyway, you know? I mean, fans or players celebrated after wins, and they should, so.
It was cool to see the old clubhouse looking like a legitimate batting cage now. Because, I mean, when you take the tour and they freaking have to pull, like, they had the clubhouse, this narrow rectangle, and then they showed how they would pull down a net to guard the TVs in there
right.
when somebody would come in and take some swings.
Off a tee.
Which was pathetic. And so seeing the pictures now of it looking like somewhat like a legitimate batting cage was kind of cool.
Well, and there's like, you know, some really like scientific, you know, there's some like high tech stuff in there as far as the training facilities go. So I think that's really going to help the team, you know, as far as their workouts and everything like that goes. And like you said, Andy, being able to have in-game access to the batting cages and everything, but also the tech side, as far as like, you know, the film room and everything, it's all right there and greatly improved. And so obviously as a team that it takes seriously analytics and everything. And I just think this makes the Cubs a better team. If you look past the celebration room and you look past the locker room and you actually in the clubhouse and you actually look at like the facilities, I think it makes this team better. And that's a good thing.
Well, and I think the immediate impact is, for those of you who like to see Kyle Schwarber hanging around, that's not possible without this facility. He's probably in Mesa. If they don't have this new facility. So, I mean, there right off the bat, he's staying with the team and he's rehabbing there and he's got all the facilities that he needs in the training rooms and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
And just to be able to prepare in no stress before, you know, in a stress-free environment before games. Whereas before, like, you're in the old clubhouse, you could turn around and accidentally sword fight a guy or, you know, like just all kinds of things could happen that could kind of create strife and stress. And now it's just like space all around. They have the space halo. They can get ready in comfort, you know, and then you let the stress can happen out on the field and not down in the facilities.
Right. Cause you know, like Strope and his big butt, you know, that had to be an issue in the old clubhouse. Guys were always bumping into him and I don't know, whoever had their locker next to him, surely.
And now it's round clubhouse. So everybody's butts are touching.
Oh man. All right. Well, I think we said everything that could be said about a clubhouse.
We can move on to real baseball.
When it reaches Pedro Strop's butt, we've touched on all things. So let's talk about the last weekend Cubs baseball. The Cubs swept a divisional foe earlier in the week, and I think that could get lost in this series loss to the Rockies. The home opener was a ton of fun. Late game heroics by Addison Russell. Andy, we met up with Michael from Galesburg, Tony from Alexis, and Tad from Peoria at Duffy's in Galesburg, And Duffy's was in rare form that night. Kurt, you've got to come. You got to come down to one of those. So normally it's not so packed, but they do an opening day party every year. But I think because opening day was at 9 p.m., and I would guess most of Duffy's patrons are passed out drunk by then because they've been drinking since 10 in the morning. So I guess since it was a night game, they decided to do their big party for the home opener. And Andy, just I think people might hear us talk about a packed Duffy's, and people hear us talk about Duffy's. This is not your normal like sports bar crowd, is it?
No, in fact, I made a little list of things that were at Duffy's that night. We had a Harry Carey impersonator who was walking around in character the whole time. And so like when it was very electric, say after Russell's home run, he was just wandering around saying, listen to this crowd, you know, and stuff like that.
And holy cow. And holy cow. He like looked at me right in the face. He was like, holy cow.
There was the Schwarber jersey guy with crutches sitting on the bar. There were people elbowing their way in to get to the gaming machines while everybody else in the entire place is trying to watch the Cubs. They actually displaced us so they could get to their games. There was a lady having everybody rubber hat. There was racism.
But it's like, it's not, I mean, I can't figure out how to describe Duffy's. It is like...
Well, if you're from a small Midwestern town, I think you
it's
get your, it.
It's a towny bar, but yeah. Like the average age is significantly older than we are, I think. You know, especially on a normal night. That night, there were a lot of other people there. But it's not like, it's not a sports bar, but it is a Cubs bar. I mean, it's that place is nuts about the Cubs. My favorite aspect of the evening was like, I mean, that place went absolutely bonkers when Russell hit that home run. I mean, yeah, Duffy's was electric. And I didn't notice it at first, but Tony pointed out there was a girl standing near us just bawling. I mean, it was like a playoff atmosphere in there. And I think it was at Wrigley, too. I mean, you could tell that it was, you know, a very a ton of excitement in the building at Wrigley. But like, watching that, people were like living and dying with every pitch, and it was like it felt like we were there watching a playoff game. And then when Addison Russell hit that home run, and the girl was, I mean, she had tears just streaming down her face. And it was like, oh man, this is like game seven of the season. It's not game seven of the World Series.
Oh man.
Yeah, it was entertaining and so packed I nailed a dude with the front door when I first tried to come in. We had to go around to the back door. And found our way in that way.
I also like that they have a big giveaway, and it was like a Cubs windbreaker from like Ross Dress for Less or TJ Maxx or something like that.
Right, and this massive person won this like size medium windbreaker too.
Oh, and she found the humor in that too, though. Oh man, I love Duffy so much. But see, yeah, so when we do our weekend at the lake thing, though, it's not. You know, it's not that crowd. We pretty much have the bar to ourselves, except for like the dude that, you know, is missing an arm because he got ran over by a train and stuff like that. But, oh man. But here's something I wanted to mention though, from that night. And it kind of like, this is the night that I think it kind of first dawned on me. So like, Tawny had to leave. She was there with us, but then she had to leave to relieve the babysitter and stuff. And, you know, like I was kind of curious what, how the season's going with your wives, because like Tawny is definitely paying way more attention to the Cubs this year. And like it shocked me. She listened to the game on her way home from Duffy's and then listened to it here. She's been listening to the podcast, and like, I don't know. I just think like, I think that like, she's kind of kept her emotions with the Cubs at arm's length, basically just based on previous sports disappointment. You know, Cubs and Notre Dame and the things that she's kind of adopted since meeting me. But I was kind of curious. I know Beth watches a ton of games and everything, but, you know, last year was like an exciting season, especially the second half of the season. And so I think a lot of people kind of got drawn into it then. But like so far this season, they've been like really freaking good. And so I think that's like a completely new thing. I mean, they were good at the second half of the season, but they were struggling. You know, they weren't struggling, but they were chasing those playoff spots, or they were trying to hold on to the playoff spots and things like that. So it was like still kind of nervous. This is early enough in the season. It's just fun. And so I think, I don't know. I was kind of curious. Is Lana paying any more attention, Kurt?
Maybe. It's too early, I think, to see any noticeable difference. I think like today, you know, it's 75 degrees and we're spending the entire day outside. So I know early in our resolution episode, we talked about listening more on the radio. So we did that today. So that's kind of like our household routine, is it'll be on the radio no matter what, and kind of on TV if we have time. So, yeah, I think right now it's still status quo, but I'm hoping later in the season that I can maybe she won't be interested and I can just watch by myself. I don't know. We'll see. But no big differences in this household yet.
But you're right. It makes a difference that we've only had two or three games that have been relatively low scoring. There's been a lot of offensive firepower, especially in the part of the Cubs. And even in the low scoring games, like the pitching performances sometimes have been pretty excellent. So it's been entertaining baseball so far, and it's helped. It's been pretty absorbing to all kinds of fans.
Yeah.
And we're still in like using, which I guess is a good thing. We're using a couple innings of baseball as a bribe for our 4-year-old. So if you're good, you can watch 2 innings. Before you go to bed.
In other words, if you're good, Dad gets to watch 2 innings.
Yeah, exactly. It's great, and he loves it. So
yeah,
everybody wins.
Yeah,
nice.
So yeah, that home opener was a really fun game, and then the Cubs just demoralized the Reds after that 9-2 and 8-1 wins. And it was really impressive just to watch Cubs batters just dissect the Reds pitching. In the 9-2 win on Wednesday, Simon was the starter. He lasted 2/3 of an inning. So in the first inning, he gave up 5 runs on 4 hits, 3 walks. He threw 49 pitches. And then in Thursday's game, the 8-1 win, it was patience to plate and taking a lot of pitches that drove Iglesias's pitch count up. He threw 93 pitches in 5 innings. And then it just seemed inevitable that the Cubs were going to take advantage of the Reds bullpen. And it ended up being JJ Hoover, I guess in the crosshairs. he gave up 5 runs, 4 earned on 3 hits and 3 walks in 1/3 of an inning. And I really just really enjoy the Cubs' ability to drive up pitch counts and then just punish bad bullpens. And I look forward to seeing that all season long. And the Cubs get to play some weaker teams in the NL Central, like the Reds and the Brewers, a lot. So I really expect the Cubs just to lay it on teams like that.
And you can see already, like, when they sort of get away from that game plan. I mean, I don't know exactly what their plan was going into today's game against Chatwood, but that guy was, like, at 50-some pitches in the fifth inning, you know. So, like, when they aren't maintaining that or not sticking to that general overall plan, it seems to be a problem for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to remember, so Chatwood was good today, and I think we should give him some credit. And so for all the people we talked about earlier, they're kind of freaking out. So Chatwood went 7 innings. He only gave up 2 hits and 1 walk and struck out 7. So, like, that's a pretty dominant start. And that's, to me, that's what it takes to beat this team. So sure. Cubs lost today 2-0. So if that's what we're looking at, that it's going to take your starter going 7 and having that kind of dominant performance to beat this team, we're not going to see a ton of losses, because that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. It was Wednesday's game? No. It was Thursday's game, right? Where the guy had like a no hitter going into like the 7th or something, and the Cubs still scored 9 runs.
Well, that was Monday, the home opener, wasn't it?
No.
Yeah, because the Cubs did have got a run in the 2nd on Thursday's game.
Okay, maybe I'm confused. Wait, when? What?
Yeah,
it was. Oh yeah, it was Monday.
The home opener. Yeah, right, they won.
Right.
5-3.
Yeah. Duh. Yeah.
The Leicester.
This week was kind of a blur for me. Yeah, it was Monday, and it was just like, it still just felt like, and even in today's game, I just felt like they can score runs. Like, even if, like, if it gets down in previous years, if the Cubs were, you know, losing like they were, you know, in either Monday's game or today's game by at the end of the seventh, you're like, oh, they've only got six outs. And you look at the, you know, it usually meant the bottom of the lineup was coming up, and it was like, well, there's outs there and there's really nobody off the bench. And right now, it's like, oh, okay, so they can take out Ross and bring in Montero, and LaStella can hit. I mean, it's just such a different lineup, and it just feels like they can score any time. Like, even I think, like, today when they were down 2-0 in the ninth inning, it just felt like, okay, this is where they do it. This is, you know, you look at who's coming up in the lineup, and I really feel like, I don't know, in a way, like, losses like today's game, it doesn't bother me much because too much went well, you know?
Yeah. I wanted to talk about Lester. I think Lester's pitched really well. And then in particular in this game, he looked pretty sharp. That one homer he gave up was kind of weak, in the game, I felt. And I think he looked pretty good. He had 10 strikeouts today, but he has 3 starts so far. He's kind of, you know, his second start was his worst, I guess you could say. He gave up 3 earned runs in that game, but I think he's looked pretty good so far.
Well, yeah, and I just think the Cubs could have won the game even though they only had 3 hits. They had some really well hit balls, and the wind seemed to kind of knock them down, and it felt like things were cooking in the ninth. Fowler's ground ball is probably a hit 7 or 8 out of 10 times. And they were hitting the ball hard, and then it just seemed like Bryant maybe got a little bit too eager, swung at a bad pitch, and that put him behind in the count. And then he was kind of, I don't know, kind of after that bad pitch, it kind of felt like he was dead in the water. But I don't know. Even like it's so silly to say, but like at the end of that game, I really wasn't bothered by the loss because I thought, man, we were so close to seeing them like just pull off another late game win, you know, a ninth inning win, and it just seemed like that was going to happen. And I think that they did pretty much everything they needed to do to make that happen, except for, you know, Bryant's at bat, which you can't fault somebody for striking out. But I mean, it was LaStella hit the ball hard, Hayward hit that double down the line. I mean, it felt like things were cooking, but it was a fake rally. We're not going to get to see many of those this year. So just enjoy it and think about how much different fake rallies are this year compared to 3 years ago.
So the pitching has been good this year so far too. Like, you know, Hamill's been good. I think Kyle Hendricks has been pretty decent. There's a question in the chat from @GreenJ23 who says, how much do you credit Lester, Hamill, and Hendricks moving down a spot in the rotation to the early success? Well, just Hamill and Hendricks, but do you guys think that makes a difference?
I don't know if it necessarily does. I don't really know. I guess I'd have to think about it, but right now I would say I don't think it does have a big effect.
Yeah, other than maybe who they're matching up against to a certain extent, but I mean, I think after you get past 1 and 2 in the rotation, it's not that big of a difference either mentally or, you know, matchups wise.
Right.
Yeah. And as we get further into the regular season, the whole, you know, ace versus ace just doesn't happen as much. So I think it has less of an effect as we go into the regular season. And I think Hendricks actually deserves a lot of credit. You know, as a 5-starter, he's pitched really well. And I think his ERA is under 3. I don't know exactly what it is, but he's pitched really well. Even in that 6-1 loss, like, he held his own for as long as he could, and the offense just wasn't there, and that defense was terrible in that game. So
right,
he still deserves some credit for pitching well in his starts.
And Hamill's at .75 ERA right now in 2 starts.
Yeah.
So he's looked sharp.
Yeah. I want to correct myself. I said that LaStella had a well hit ball in the ninth. It was Zobrist. And I'm sure Ben listens to the podcast, so I wanted to make sure I cleared that up. And I'm sure he's fuming now.
The near home run that he,
yeah,
according to Pat, it sounded like it could be.
Well, yeah, and it didn't, I mean, I wasn't obviously at the ballpark, and they didn't focus a ton on the wind, but it did seem like a lot of the pop flies kind of like didn't carry like it looked like they normally would. So I think the wind, even though it wasn't like whipping in or anything, I think it did knock some of those well-hit balls down.
They showed the flags right after Zobrist's hit there, and they were the wind was moving laterally from right field to left. And they were pretty starched in the breeze, you know, the flags were. And I thought off the bat he might have gotten it, you know. So I don't think fudge, Pat was exaggerating much when he, you know, got into his, you know.
Mm-hmm. No.
'Cause it was pretty close.
The ball did have a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't overly excited, but he did a good job.
Yeah.
Had Chris Berman been calling it, he would have said back twice at least. Maybe three times. He would have said back
to the warning track. I wanted to make note of how well Soler is playing. I think that everybody kind of expected him to get off to a slow start with, you know, in chilly April weather, but he's responded well to the added pressure of the Schwarber injury. And in the last week, he has a slash line of 400, 476, 800. He's 6-for-15 with two homers, three walks, and just two strikeouts in that week. And when he hits the ball, man, he crushes that ball. I love watching his home runs. I don't know exactly what it is about his swing. I don't know if it's like his extension, like how far out he swings. There's just something that's just beautiful. And it's like kind of it feels like he has really long arms that reach out there, and his swing is just vicious. Like he just cuts through to, I don't know.
Yeah.
I like it. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of that envy the Cubs situation of like Schwarber goes down and you have Soler to replace him. I think at least offensively that so many people look at that and think, I have to say though, defensively, he makes me a little nervous and laughed. I mean, there's been a couple times where he's made some poor decisions on throwing. You know, we know he's not going to be a great defensive player, but you know, there's been times where he's like, oh no.
But you know what? Like what? I'm fine with those when they're winning 8-1 and 9-2, yes. And those are happening in April or May. You know, like I think this is great because I think that he will be an improved left fielder come September, October. He's not going to be a Gold Glover or anything like that.
No, but there's like little some things experience. Where like you throw to third, you know, where you should be throwing to second to keep the double play in order. Little things like that. I mean, it's easy to watch on TV, I think, and come down on him. But you know, he's had a few moments where,
and we're missing one big thing about Soler so far is that he's gone mask free so far this season.
Right. Do you think he just did that? I think that's like big. Fans gave him too much grief for that.
I think he's just so comfortable coming out of that clubhouse.
That could be it.
It's 98 degrees in the clubhouse. It's like a sauna.
Okay, so here's one negative though. I like how Soler's been playing, but Rizzo is really off to a slow start, and in the last week he's hitting 091, hitting 200 on the season. But the thing that I take away from that is that it's just really impressive to see the Cubs score as much as they have this season. You know, they're still a 9-3 team. The team looks this good. And Rizzo really hasn't been a huge, I mean, that's not true. He's been productive, but I guess if you remember what Rizzo meant to this team a few years ago, like 2013 or 2014, if he was playing like, you know, if he was hitting 200 on the season after a couple weeks, people would be freaking out, but it just kind of, I think like this lineup and the pitching staff takes so much pressure off of him. And it seems like even though he's hitting 200 on the season, it seems like he's getting timely hits. Mm-hmm. And like today, I thought it was hilarious. Like when he got hit by a pitch, he literally just like stood there and waited for it to hit him to take first base. Like I don't think he moved at all, and it hit him like in the back, like it almost went behind him, and he just kind of like stood there and took it. And So I don't know. I mean, I'm not worried about Rizzo in any way. I think he's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. But I just think it's impressive. Well, I am.
When you have a pitcher like John Lester hitting 500 and your best slugger can't even make 200, I mean, that's pathetic.
I just think it's really impressive that they're a 9-3 team and he's hitting 200.
Well, let's ignore the fact that he has 9 walks, you know.
Yeah, right.
So let's just forget about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if there's one guy I'm not worried about, it's Rizzo.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, yeah, he'll come around.
I guess the only reason I bring it up, like I said, is just because like it is not having an impact on the team. They're still scoring like 9 or 10 runs a game. Okay, so
yeah, when you have a 352 OBP to go along with your one whatever average,
yeah,
you're still doing some things well.
Is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about with these two series?
Oh, I did want to mention too, since I brought up Lester, him spiking the ball into the ground trying to throw it to first today. I mean, a lot of people just still wringing their hands over that, and it's baffling. It's a mystery. I mean, I was trying to think about it today and thinking about the movement when you're trying to field the ball and throw on the run is pretty different from coming to a set position and then getting into the windup and stuff like that, the mechanics of all that. And then also the, you know, I think grip, like getting the right grip on a ball is also, you know, similar, like in football, you can tell when a quarterback doesn't get a good grip on a football. I think that also has an impact on Lester throwing to a bag after fielding a ball too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was ugly.
This is a certifiable case of the yips. I mean, it's for real. But you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's pretty minor. So
right, yeah. And again,
but still, it seems like teams have let them off a little bit easy. I mean, yeah, like
I thought so too.
Like guys will take such huge leads, and he never throws, but.
And they still don't steal, really.
I mean, there was a steal today on that. I mean, there was one steal on that today because Ross had a pretty strong throw and he just still didn't have a prayer.
I mean, hasn't Ross's arm just been really impressive this year?
Yeah. He's had a lot of vim and vigor behind the plate just in general. He hasn't looked like a geriatric case, you know, at all.
I mean, it's like he's on his way out, so he's like, ligaments be damned.
I don't care if I can't move at all after the season. Giving it everything, leaving it all out on that field.
So when I was in St. Louis, I saw something, and I don't think I mentioned it to you guys. I'm kind of curious what you guys think about this. So, you know, like Cubs Authentics, you can order stuff from the website and everything like that. Well, at Busch Stadium, they have like an actual store that you can go through, which I'll say is actually really neat. I probably spent way too much time in there looking around, but they have like a lot of like historical things in there and a lot of tons of, you know, game used baseball. So I was like going through and trying to find stuff that was, you know, with the involving the Cubs. I was really trying to find game 2 of the NL or the NLDS stuff, but they didn't have any of that in there. I did find one game used baseball, but it was like the Cubs batter was Travis Wood, and it was a pitch in the dirt, and I was like, I don't really care about that.
They're selling it.
Yeah. But so check this out. They had this like table outside and it said game used pants, $20. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so I went over there. The first pair I picked up were Jason Hayward pants. So what would you guys do? $20 game worn Jason Hayward pants, but they're Cardinals pants.
Yeah.
What do you do?
And they're huge.
Well, I'm not going to wear them.
Oh, I thought you were planning on wearing them, like pulling them up to your nipples and just having a time.
I could probably wear them. I mean, the inseam's probably pretty close.
Would you guys buy them? $20 though.
No. I don't buy anything Cardinals. I'm not paying money for anything Cardinals.
They also had Lackey pants.
Unless you're going to bring him to the Weekend of the Lake and do something similar to the
Coy Hill baseball. But it's still kind of cool that it's like Jason Hayward, you know, like.
Like, what are you going to like put them on your head so like your head is in the crotch area of Jason Hayward? I mean, I'm just not sure.
Well, that's just it. I didn't buy him. And I was like, $20 so cheap, but I was like, man, if they were Cubs, like, I would have, you know, paid more than that and would have jumped at the opportunity. But it's like, I just couldn't do it. So then I go inside and I'm looking around, and they had a game-worn helmet of Jason Hayward's, right? And so I'm like, okay, so his pants were like $20 out there. You know, these helmets must be pretty cheap. And so, like, I put one on just to try it on. The, like, mouthpiece came over and stuff, and my brother-in-law took a picture. You know, even though I'm wearing Cardinals helmet, I was like, eh, it's kind of cool that Hayward wore this or whatever. And I couldn't find a price on it, well, like, on the display. And then, like, we were talking about it, and it's like, why would they have prices on everything in here? Why can't we find a price? And then I looked, and it was like, up underneath this padding, there was a price. That helmet was $2,200.
What? Whoa.
Yes. And it was just sitting out. Like Jay and I are like trying it on and acting like goofballs with it on, you know? And it's like, oh, crap, that was $2,200.
I'd rather have his crotch sweat pants than the $2,200 helmet. Jeez.
And how much was the James Russell batting helmet?
$30.
Oh, man, $2,200.
Surprising. But anyway, that's my story from St. Louis. And we did not have any posters or anything to troll Cardinals fans. Jay wore a Dodgers hat. So fans were nice to me. It was fine. I had somebody go, what the F is a Cubs fan doing here, as I walked by? And I was like, oh, okay. But that was really...
Did you say somebody tell you to spend a lot of money in there, though?
Oh, that was... Yeah, that was like as we got out... As I got out of the car in St. Louis, the first guy, like, he was kind of looking for some trouble. And he was like, you know, hey, spent... You know, he was telling me why the Cubs suck and everything like that. But, hey, you know, enjoy yourself. Spend lots of money. Spend all the money you can. Give us your money. Then I made some comment. I was like, oh, why? You know, Hayward turned it down. So money obviously wasn't the issue, or right. Something like, I can't remember how I worded it, but then he.
Well, yeah, because the Cardinals offered him more.
Right. As I quickly jumped into the Uber to get away from him. he was wearing camo and stuff. You know, I don't know. People right. live in a big city and wear camo. It makes me nervous.
Drenched in dough urine.
right. But the only people that really talked to us were like some of the ushers and stuff, and they were really nice. You know, same thing that we encountered at game two, older folks that were really nice. So Jay wore a Dodgers hat, I wore a Cubs hat, and then these two girls came and sat by us like in the second inning. They came to their seats. The girl sitting right next to me was wearing a Red Sox hat. The girl next to her was wearing a Giants hat. So it was like four like completely different teams fans sitting in a row. okay, so
you don't think of Busch Stadium as being a melting pot like that.
No. So Javier Baez, he came up for this weekend series with the Rockies. I think the Cubs front office does a spectacular job of making us look like fools with our predictions. Or at least me. Last week they acted like Baez wasn't quite ready, and it looked like it might be a little while. And I said I would be surprised if he came up this week, and they called him up like 4 days later. He was in Iowa for like two or three games. so obviously he had been injured since the middle of spring training when he slid headfirst into first base. He hurt his thumb. He was rehabbing in Arizona. And then last week we talked about him taking a pitch to the helmet that kind of acted like that might set him back a little bit. After a few days in Iowa, the Cubs called him up and they sent Kawasaki back down to Iowa, which infuriated a lot of Cubs fans, and I'll get to that in the internet muscle flex section.
oh man.
So in the two games we've seen Baez play two different positions. He played second on Saturday and then shortstop today. And I kind of think that's what this season will be for Baez. He's worked at becoming versatile in the field, and I think if he needed to, he could play pretty much any of the seven positions. He seems to be seeing the ball well. He went 2-for-4 on Saturday with a double. He went 1-for-3 today, and he got the first Cubs hit of the game in the fifth today. I'm happy to see Baez up. In the two games that he's played, he's looked pretty good, and I look forward to seeing how Madden uses him.
That ball he hit today, didn't he break up the...
Yeah, there was
he didn't a, break up the no. He broke up the no hitter today, right?
Right. Yeah, he got their first hit.
But yeah, that sharply hit ball down the third baseline he hit was a reminder of just how powerful his swing is. He killed that ball.
Yeah, or the, yeah. There was that pitch in yesterday's game where the catcher kind of like stood up and like, you know, had the pitcher throw it way high, and Baez just like, and it was high and outside, and Baez like, that's just in a fastball. I'm almost positive it was a fastball, and Baez just went up and smacked it into right field. So it's just so impressive to watch him hit like that. I mean, his home runs are impressive, but I really enjoy watching him, like, you know, go the opposite way. You know, think back to game four of the NLDS against the Cardinals, where he took that pitch that was like 6 inches out of the strike zone and put it in the bleachers. And he's just I really enjoy watching him. And his, you know, obviously we've been saying this for like 4 years, but his bat speed is just so ridiculous. Everybody knows my love of his wrists.
And
Flick butt and Javier Baez's wrist.
No, it was Michael Brindley's thighs.
Oh,
it was
thighs. Thighs.
And Flick of the Wrist, you know that song? I found out today that has to do with the making of crack. But anyway, Matt Hartman in the chat says it's good to see him selective on the pitches he's swinging at. So he has shown the ability to be a little bit more selective than we've seen in the past. But then also I was noticing today is he has like a Castro-esque ability to, like, on two strikes to basically fight almost anything off.
Right.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that I really enjoy Baez, like, and I was kind of nervous that it might take a while for him to come up, but he's a player I've really liked him ever since I first saw him in low A Peoria. I mean, I just think he's exciting to watch, and I hope that he has a really good season. And I think that he's also so good in the field, and his arm is, I mean, he just has like a rifle, you know, mm-hmm. Or a cannon. I don't know my firearms, but he can rifle the ball with his cannon. He's got a super strong arm, and you know, he's fun to watch play shortstop. And I mean, look at like, was it yesterday's game where he, you know, he has such a quick like tag at second base on stolen bases. And he's just an exciting player. I'm really glad he's part of the team and that he's up contributing right now.
Yeah. And for any of those people who are thinking he's not an improvement over Kawasaki, there's nothing we can say to convince you. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The front office is just blowing it.
Yeah. Yep.
Sending down Kawasaki. Like I said, though, we'll get to those in a little bit. So the minor league season is about a week and a half in, and we haven't spent nearly as much time on the minor league teams as we have in years past because, well, the Cubs are good, and we're not forced to distract ourselves from the Chicago Cubs with the minor league system. So now those players that we used as distractions a couple years ago are on the Cubs team, and they're good, so that's why we're paying attention to them. But we did want to briefly give you an update on where some of the Cubs' notable prospects are and where they're playing right now and how they've played this year. So short season Eugene, they start their season in June, maybe the middle of June or something. So we have a while till short season starts. But with low A South Bend, there's a few notable names. Donnie Deweese was the Cubs' second round pick in last year's draft, and he's off to a good start. He's hitting .400, OBP of .500. In 9 games, he has 2 doubles and 4 triples and 3 stolen bases. South Bend is coming to the Quad Cities in about a week and a half, so I'm really looking forward to seeing him and also seeing Eloy Jimenez. We saw him a little at spring training last year. I don't think I got to see him this year at spring training. I'm not sure how I missed that, but Jimenez was part of that international free agent signing period when the Cubs signed Gleyber Torres. He was 18 when we saw him at spring training last year, and he looked huge. I would imagine that he's filling out a little bit more, but he's listed at 6'4", 205, and he seemed big then, and he looked like he could get stronger, almost looked like a younger Jorge Soler. But I haven't seen him in game action, which doesn't really mean anything because I'm not a scout. So I suppose I'll sit and drink a beer at Modern Woodman and say, Well, there's Eloy. That's cool. He's and then pitching wise, there's a couple of guys with South Bend from that 2014 draft where Schwarber took less money, and that freed the Cubs up to sign more pitchers in the following rounds. Carson Sands and Justin Steele are with South Bend. Moving up to High A, Myrtle Beach. These are obviously a lot of guys that were with South Bend last year. The biggest name is Gleyber Torres, who is the Cubs' top prospect. Ian Happ is with Myrtle Beach, and he was the first pick in the 2015 draft. He's considered the Cubs' number three prospect. The sample size is so small, it's not even really worth mentioning stats. But, you know, all these guys in the lower levels, we're not going to see them anytime soon, and the pitchers move slowly, and even guys like Torres or Happ have a lot of development to do before they're ready. So this is just kind of a season where you'd like to see improvement, and I guess we'll kind of check in from time to time. So how about Tennessee?
Yeah, Tennessee. Looking at the three guys I think that we should be paying attention to there, all of them are off to a chilly start, but I expect them to pick up. That includes Billy McKinney, ranked number six on the MLB chart. Jamer Candelario, number seven, and Mark Zagunas, number 18. Zagunas, other sites have him a lot higher. Baseball America says he has the best strike zone discipline in the system. And so, yeah, all these guys are off to a cold start, but Zagunas will show his play discipline. You know, last year his OBP was 406 and he collected 80 walks. Wow. So that's just a guy to keep an eye on because he seems to fit with the type of player that the front office is into. McKinney split time between Myrtle Beach and Tennessee last season. He's starting with Tennessee here this season, and he hit 300 last year. Candelario was also the same scenario last year, split time between Myrtle Beach and Tennessee. But once he got to Tennessee, he registered 46 hits in 46 games, good for a 291 average, and drove in 25 runs as well. Those are the three guys I picked. I mean, there's some pitchers too that we could keep an eye on, like Jen Hosang and Blackburn. But for the most part, you know, those are the main guys.
How about Iowa, Kurt?
So I think kind of the recent news out of Iowa is that it's been a tough couple of weeks for their starting rotation. They basically lost three starting pitchers that they started the season with. So Jokic went to Miami via waivers. Stephen Fife went on the 7-day DL with what Marty Peavy described as a possible rib cage type deal, whatever that means. he'll probably be out for, I don't know, maybe a start or two. I don't know how long a possible rib cage type deal, how many starts you might miss for that. And then kind of the most unfortunate news is that Pierce Johnson, who is ranked as the number 11 prospect, probably the closest starting pitcher that the Cubs have in the minors to being ready to compete for this rotation maybe next year. He got hit on a comebacker in the arm, and he'll probably miss about a month, maybe three starts or something like that. So nothing like a, you know, ligament damage or anything like that, and there's no fractures according to the x-ray, so I think probably they'll be cautious with him with that injury. So yeah, tough start on the rotation when you lose three guys quickly.
And I mean, you hate to see anybody get hit by a baseball, obviously, but that really could help the Cubs late in the season because his inning count will be down. And they might need that help there towards the end of the season. And he could maybe come in and play like an Adam Warren or Cahill role, you know, in September or October.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody's, you know, with this kind of thing, you just shut them down and they're going to be really cautious with him. So it doesn't look like anything too serious. And hopefully it stays that way. Other guys to watch in Iowa, of course, Wilson Contreras. He's kind of really jumped up in the last couple of years. He's ranked on MLB as the number two prospect, mostly because of what he did in Double A last year, where he hit 333. And he's kind of off to a hot start in Iowa. He has 15 hits in the first nine games with a 429 average. And there's a guy, you know, we'll probably see in September, potentially sooner, depending on what happens with this roster. So, yeah, he's a good offensive player and also hopefully a good defensive catcher. So a lot of value there with a catcher who can hit. And, of course, Albert Almora, we know he's pretty much ready defensively. I mean, the guy has nothing more to prove in center field. We're just sort of wondering what the bat will do, which is never going to be his best asset. So
right.
I think if he's serviceable at the plate or, you know, hitting, his defense is always going to be pretty great. So, and then, of course, Pierce Johnson that I mentioned before. So, like I said, he's the closest to being on a starting staff, but maybe next year. So, yeah, some good stuff to watch in Iowa. And, of course, with Iowa, you're going to see guys who are more veteran players who may come up and down throughout the year, like Kawasaki, who we've seen already.
Yeah, well, obviously, I mean, the Cubs are going to be great now that Kawasaki, or Iowa Cubs are going to be great now that Kawasaki's down there.
Yeah, they'll be entertaining at least.
Right, that's true. Yeah.
And cramp free.
Anybody listening to this is going to think that we're Kawasaki haters, which is not the case.
No.
No, we love him.
Yeah. So, Kurt, do you have a scary stat of the week?
I sure do. And these are way more fun early in the year. Don't play it. And so the one I'm going with this week is the Cubs run differential. And it was higher, and this is current as of Sunday night. And the run differential is currently plus 40.
that's crazy.
Which it was higher before this Rocky series. I think it was like 45 maybe at one point. And so if you add up the run differential of every other division leader in all of baseball, you get plus 44. And so it's helped a little
so
by the fact
that the other five division leaders,
yes.
If you add all of their run differentials,
yes,
it's 44.
You get plus 44 and the Cubs are plus 40. That's helped a lot by the fact that the Rockies just overtook the Giants and they're minus 9. But still, I mean, it puts into perspective how good plus 40 is. There are seven teams in baseball who haven't even scored 40 runs yet. And the Cubs are plus 40 on the differential. So they're scoring a ton of runs. The only unfortunate news about this scary stat is that the Cardinals have actually scored more runs than the Cubs and that they're right behind them in differential. So, you know,
yeah,
whatever. I don't know what else to say about that. But
right. We can't enjoy anything without the Cardinals being there. Like, well, actually.
casting a pall over it.
But they're still not as good in differential.
Right. Or record, which is what really matters.
Right.
When it, yeah. Well, I have a kind of a scary stat of the week. And I'm just kind of going off memory because I feel like I saw this earlier in the day on Twitter, and maybe I have it wrong, but I'm going to assume that I don't. But I believe I saw that Jake Arrieta is the first MLB pitcher with six straight scoreless home starts. So
dang,
yeah, that sounds right.
He looks
sounds just right.
Yeah, man. I tweeted this yesterday. I can't remember what not amazing Jake Arrieta is like I can't, like I no longer I think for a while it was kind of like, you know, last season you're like, oh, okay, this run has to end at some point, he's gonna get roughed up a little bit, and now it's just like I can't see him losing a game ever. Like I just can't picture it unless it's like a game like today where they literally don't score any runs. It's so hard. Isn't it hard to, like, if I told you, oh yeah, Jake Arrieta's next start, the Cubs are going to lose 8-6. I mean, it just doesn't seem possible.
No, it does.
Well, it's even to the point now where he gives up a couple of hits and it kind of weirds me out. I'm not joking. I mean, this isn't even like, I'm not even BSing. Like I'm listening on the radio and he gives up a hit or two and I'm like, what's going on?
Or not even like, a hit. It's like he gives up three fly balls. And you're like, whoa, wait a minute. He's not striking guys out. Yeah, he's just so, he's insane. It's so much fun to watch him too. Okay, so internet muscle flexes. Do you guys have any tonight?
I do.
I have one.
One.
Okay. I'm going to read, let me read one, and then I have a few that go together. So one is from a picture today that the Cubs posted on Instagram. I think the Cubs did. Yeah. And it's Joe Maddon like signing a baseball for a girl in the dugout. And, you know, just, and it says something like the Cubs have the caption that says, "Shame we didn't pull off the win today, but glad we could still make this day special for 9-year-old Maya." Which is nice, right?
So very nice.
Right. So then this happens in the comments.
Somebody's going to run it.
No. Okay. So person number one says, "All you guys are." Oh, so a lot of the people commenting are just like, "Oh, yeah, that's really sweet." You know, like it's.
Corey.
It's yeah.
Can I just say that this is my exact muscle flex? Oh, okay. I think it's hilarious. No, okay. No, you do it. You do it.
No, I have others. Keep going. I have others.
No, keep going.
Okay.
You've already set it up. Go for it.
I'm sorry. I didn't even think about the fact that we may have the same one.
No, that's fine. I just think it's funny that we have the same one.
So how about
I don't
this?
Care at all.
How about you play person number two? Let's role play this out. So do you see the person whose username starts with an S?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. you be her and I'll be the other guy.
Oh, we're assigning gender now.
All right. First of all, this is happening on a picture where there shouldn't be any strife or acrimony. It's just like pat on the back, way to go Cubs, you know, giving this girl, you know, her day,
right,
her special
sitting
day
in the dugout. Okay.
Right.
So my guy, what he says is, and I'm going to edit some of this, the swearing and stuff, just because I don't feel like it's necessary. But he says, "All of you guys are bandwagons. GTFO this page. I'm probably the only true Cubs fan here."
It has to be trolling, man. I
don't know. Okay, so you come in with the next person.
And the next person... "I have been a Cubs fan since 1962, so think before you speak."
Shut the F up. "You probably didn't know what baseball was until this year."
"You didn't know what it was. Since 1962, she hasn't known what it was."
I don't
but
think
she's
that it
still
was
a fan.
I don't think it was trolling. I don't know.
Anyway, it's unbelievable stupidity if it's not trolling.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Okay, so can I... Actually, I'm going to jump back real quick to a scary stat of the week. I just saw I screenshotted something. As I'm looking through internet muscle flexes, I'm seeing this. So, Arrieta extended his franchise record to 23 straight quality starts and has now thrown 48 and two-thirds consecutive scoreless innings at Wrigley Field. Yeah, first... pitcher in MLB history to make 6 straight regular season home starts without being charged a run. And his 48 and two-thirds consecutive scoreless innings at home are the second longest for any pitcher at their home park since 1962. He's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead with yours, Kurt.
Okay. Mine is in response to a tweet from Peter Gammons. And Gammons tweeted, "Defining the Cubs' unselfishness, Chris Bryant has already played third base, left field, and right field, and they're a week and a half into the season." Which I thought was a nice little gesture from Gammons, national guy. And then the first couple of responses down, this person says, "And right now, they're the second best team in Chicago." Which I thought was pretty great.
Oh, man. I don't even know what to say about that. Okay, so this last one here. So this is about, apparently the Cubs, I think when they called up Baez, they posted on Instagram a picture of him and said in the caption that they were sending down Kawasaki. And so these are some of the responses. "WTF, get Baez's ass out of here and call up Kawa." Apparently Kawa, calling him that is a thing because the next person says, "I like Kawa more." And then this person says, bad call. Such a selfish player. And the last Baez is. And then this person says, I'd take Kawasaki over Baez every time. Oh man, I love sports fans.
This is what we're gonna have to put up with the whole year, though. Like,
I know
it doesn't really matter what happens.
Look how much joy it brings to us, though, Kurt.
I know it is pretty funny.
Oh boy. All right. So that does it for this week's episode. Again, we're playing Katie Day here. Like I said earlier in the episode, please go purchase By the Lakeside or one of Katie's EPs in iTunes or the Google Play Store. Just search Katie Day. Katie's doing really cool things and she has more in store. So let's support her. This episode was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. We have some new supporters this week. Evan in Chicago, Ben in Washington, D.C., Chris in Franklin, Tennessee, and Rives in Northbrook. Thanks to all of you for joining the Patreon campaign. Patreon is how we keep this podcast going. It pays for our website and audio hosting. It pays for our IVMB app, which is free on iOS and Android. It helps us fund equipment replacement and upgrades, and it helps fund some of our live events. So if you enjoy what we're doing here and you would like to help out and get some IVMB swag like stickers, posters, pint glasses, go to patreon.com/IVMB. That's patreon.com/IVMB. Or you can go to IVMB.com and click on the Patreon link on the right side of the page. Also, we're going to give away this box of Rizzos I'm holding up in front of the camera for the live viewers to a Patreon supporter. So if you would like your chance to win this box of Rizzo's cereal, which was supposedly only available in the Chicago area, but we were able to get some. So we're going to give this away. The cutoff is Saturday, and we will name the winner on Sunday night's episode. So the Cubs head out of town now. They go to St. Louis for a series on Monday through Wednesday. Lackey and Hayward will return to St. Louis, and I'm sure the best fans in baseball will really stick it to Hayward for being a traitor. So we will be back with our midweek episode Wednesday night to talk about the series with the Cardinals. And until then, go Cubs. It's about damn time. We're going to pop champagne by the lakeside when the evening comes. When the stars align, we're going to pop champagne. Going to pop champagne by the lakeside.
Him, what would you do if you had to face Jake Arrieta? Quote, I don't know what I'd do. Get in the box.